It's Thursday. I'm Gab. It's Jules. It's overcast outside, but that's okay because it's West London in March. What are you going to do? We have a packed show for you. We'll be talking Champions League. We'll be talking a bit of Real Madrid, a bit of Bayern Munich. We'll have packed quick hits.
Yeah.
But let's start with Chelsea against Atletico Madrid, two teams that maybe at the start of the knockout seemed possible outsiders to win it all. Chelsea comprehensively beating Atletico Madrid over two legs. I want to start at the top with Frank Leboeuf, who's joining us, because, Frank, easy question. Most observers, I think Jules and I agree on this, would have City and Bayern in whatever order as the two best teams in the world right now. Are Chelsea third favorites for the Champions League after those two, or you have somebody else in mind?
Hello. First, I would place them around there, but I cannot forget Real Madrid, because even if we can consider that Real Madrid a problem, I don't think that any teams in those other seven teams involved in the quarterfinal would be interesting of playing Real Madrid because of the experience they have, because they know that, you know, somehow they still can make the difference and go through. After, yes, I will put Chelsea, because Paris Saint-Germain is a fantastic team, but we don't know where to go. After what we saw in the second leg, what we see every weekend in the Ligue 1, we can be concerned about the fact that Paris Saint-Germain won't be able to win that Champions League this season. And Chelsea is improving every day. Every game they play, it's better and better. The players are getting better. Ziyech maybe had his best game of the season since he signed for Chelsea. Kante is back to the Kante that we like and we love. Kovacic alongside him was absolutely perfect. And the defense kept the clean sheet one more time. So, So I think we can say that Chelsea, I don't think they're going to win the Champions League. But if you want to make a prediction, they're not going to be far away from City and Bayern, who are definitely the best team, the two best teams in the world.
We're going to get more into some of those Chelsea themes, how good they were defensively, and their chances going forward, and Ziyech as well. But Atletico Madrid really upset by some of the officiating from Daniele Rosato, who, by the way, I bumped into that same morning in my local park, dressed in full UEFA kit,
naturally. Of course.
But I want to ask you, Jules, you were there. Did they look in real time? Did either one of those incidents, I mean, especially the Carrasco one,
yeah,
did that look like a penalty to you?
Not at all. And I was on the right side of the pitch. Even from the players and Diego Simeone, there was a little appeal, but not that bad. And on Spanish television after the game, Simone was asked about the penalty. I said, no, it was not a pen. And this is not an excuse anyway, because they know how inferior they were to Chelsea. So I think the red card could be given. I've got no problem with this. Savi shouldn't do that in the first place, even if it's not in the head, even if it's not the strongest of elbows, don't do that. And for the pen, I don't think either. So
let's get Frank's take on the Savage to Rudiger elbow, because this is something that, I mean, many years ago, maybe defenders were even taught to do, in the sense, obviously, if you elbow the guy in the face, he's going to fall over. If you elbow him in the chest, you know, am I making position? Am I establishing, you know, my dominance over him? How do you see it?
How do I see it? It's complicated, because I think for me, it was just a little elbow and nothing. Nothing in 5 weeks can put you on the floor and you can scream for your life and you're going to die. I'm more worried about the fact that it's just the example that you give to kids that pushes the referee to give you a red card, where you have a tackle from Koke. I think it's on Kovacic or Avers, I don't remember, where he gets a yellow card, where the tackle is very violent because he doesn't try to play the ball. And for me, it's more dangerous than a little elbow on the chest. That's my concern about that. He shouldn't have done that because of the law. He deserved to be red carded. And of course, Rüdiger was looking for it. But I have a problem with that, you know. We can understand also the frustration. We know that Rüdiger is pushing him on the back. And I know, because I was a defender, I know how to do it. And you have to be sometimes a little bit, I would say, twisted, yeah, you know, to try it and push the guy to get over it. And it's what happened to Savage. And it was because of the frustration, because of the loss of the game, and the fact that he won't get to the quarterfinal. Savage lost his mind and elbowed him.
And isn't the classic one in those situations, Frank, it's better just go and step on Rudiger's foot, right? Don't just elbow him. Like, there's other ways to get even.
Pinch him or something like that,
Or even go old school and maybe grab a piece of his anatomy, as we saw many years ago. Enzo Francescoli, I believe it was, no? Frank, quickly, and we will get into this more on our podcast segment. Can you give us, in 45 seconds or so, any explanation why an experienced manager like Diego Simeone would get it so wrong over two legs?
I don't know. I don't know how to explain that. I don't know. I don't really follow the Liga. And I really thought that Chelsea would have a harder time that they had during the two legs against that team, was first in La Liga. And we had nothing. We had nothing, and we had no reaction whatsoever from Simeone. Sometimes you say, oh, yeah, he has an idea, and he's going to come, and he's going to change the game. On the two legs, it was quite pathetic what we saw from them, because we saw nothing. It was such a disappointment for me.
I think it was a disappointment for a lot of people. At least wanted to see more of an opening game. We'd been bigging up Cholismo 2.0. Mm-hmm. Podcast listeners, there'll be much more from Frank. So if you want to download our podcast, do that. Podcast listeners, you're still with us, which is why I'm dropping my voice as we get a little more intimate here with Jules and Frank. Jules, we heard, I'm going to start with you because we're going to stay with Atleti for the time being. We'll get into Chelsea in a moment. But you heard Frank's assessment. Frank called them pathetic. I don't know if I go that far, but I would just say he made a lot of decisions and he got them wrong. I think in the first leg, he just wanted to keep it tight, see if I can nick something, go back to Cholo 1.0. In the second leg, we saw high press at the beginning,
but not
which
for long.
Didn't last more than 15, 20 minutes. I really thought that with Trippier and Carrasco back and Jimenez's leadership, it didn't work. And Suarez felt like wasn't in the game at all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is Diego Simeone's failure. There's no doubt. This is, we talked a bit before about how he tried to maybe play a bit more expensive football this season because he had different players.
And he has done in other games.
Yeah, but Gab, there's a difference between, you know, wanting to do that and trying to adapt your system so you play with a back three that sometimes is a back four and Carrasco's that sort of free role on the left-hand side as a wing back. But you need more. You need more to beat a team like Chelsea. You need more to go further in the Champions League. It's not just okay to put, let's have Suarez and Joao Felix and then maybe Moussa Dembele and then Angel Correa and then Marcos Llorente. You need more. You need practice. You need to put things together. You need patterns of play. You need movement. You need to build something.
On the issue of patterns of play, though, that's a good point because if you look, he's actually a manager who rotates a lot, both in terms of system and in terms of personnel. You know, we've seen Saul started, we've seen Saul drop, there was no room for Lamar in this game. When you make those choices, I wonder, is it harder to have kind of that sort of natural cohesion that comes?
I think so. And also, it's not just as simple as, okay, let's play 20 or 30 yards higher up on the pitch compared to what we've done for the last 10 years. And let's put a few technical players there and there, and then this is going to work out together. There could not be Lokomotiv Moscow in the group stages. The only team they've beaten this season in the Champions League is RB Salzburg.
That's Jesse Marsh. Come on.
But even then, they struggled at the time. It's just to show you that it's not as simple, just Frank, just to finish. It's just not as simple as doing that. You need to work on things, as we saw with Chelsea, who are so much different and better with Tuchel.
Frank?
Yeah, you know what? I was impressed with the decision that Simeone made at the beginning of the game, where he wanted to put the pressure on Chelsea, and I say, okay, he's going to change. He finally agreed that the first leg was poor and it was too defensive, so he decided to go forward. But the way Chelsea played for the first 50 minutes, I only see one team capable of playing that way was Manchester City, that we all agree is one of the best teams in the world. Chelsea played for the first 15 minutes like I never seen Chelsea playing with the ball. They never lost the ball except in the last 20 yards. they were starting from Mendy, playing on the you know, with the defenders and the midfielders, and it was even Tuchel got up and applauded his players because the way they were playing, it was Barcelona at his best or Manchester City now at his best. And it's why maybe I think they disgusted the Atleti player because they couldn't get the ball back with the pressure, so they dropped naturally, and it's when the trouble came up.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'm struck by this because we talked about Simeone changing systems and personnel. Tuchel, he generally keeps the same system. He generally keeps the same back three. Obviously, Thiago Silva's out now, but you have an idea. Mm. But then when you change people in the system, you know, Hudson-Odoi has different characteristics than Reece James. Ziyech has different characteristics than Mason Mount. Mm. Jorginho has different characteristics than N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah.
And of course, the strikers are all different. So it seems to, how does he do it? Because we just said maybe part of the reason they can't do it well, Simeone, is because he changes systems and personnel. Well, this guy Tuchel's been there, what, 2 months?
2.5, yeah.
And he can, he manages to do it. He keeps the same system, but changes perhaps the actors in that system.
Yeah, but I think he's pragmatic compared to the opposition. So whoever they play against, and we saw against Liverpool when he explained, I chose Timo Werner ahead of Olivier Giroud, for example, because I wanted that pace to run in behind. And we saw Werner doing really well in that game, scoring a goal that was disallowed for offside, slight offside, but really causing problems to Liverpool. It was the same against Atletico Madrid in this second leg because they wanted to be more pace up front. In the first leg, he wanted Giroud because he knew how deep Atleti would defend, which was, so I think he adapts his team selection, not the system, but the team selection to whoever he plays against. But just to come back on Frank's point, there's two axes of work since he arrived. The first one is to build from the back and beat the opposition's press. And we saw that not just against Atletico, but against Liverpool, they were fantastic of getting the ball back out from the back and build up like this, their play. And then it's themselves to put pressure on the opposition and get the ball back in the other opponent's half and get the ball back as high as possible, which we saw again last night. I mean, in the first half, Conte recovered the ball 7 times in 45 minutes, Rudiger 8 times, and often Rudiger even in Atleti's half. And I think that capacity of putting you under pressure and almost choke you to get the ball back, even if he's just on the halfway line, it's a huge advantage. And that's the two things that they've been really working hard since he took over.
Yeah, there's no question that Tuchel, you know, we talked about when he came over about his high pressing game that we saw before. It's the same concepts. It's just many times he does it from deeper positions, but you still win the ball. And if you have fast strikers, it actually helps you because they have more space in which to run. Frank, I want to ask you about Kai Havertz because I think it's fair to say, and probably predictably, because he is very young, so he's young, moving to a new league and he's dealt with two different managers. His Chelsea career has been very up and down. Some people aren't entirely sold on him. I think when you see him play in the flesh, even more so than on television, you realize how natural he looks.
There, yeah.
And how unusual it is for a guy his size to have that combination of skills. But what did you make of him? Because he's getting a run of games in the team, sometimes as in a center forward role. I know I'm supposed to put false in front of it, but no, if you play center forward, you're center forward, just with different skills. What do you think of this development?
I think he's getting better, which is not something, you know, that I'm not expecting. I want to see more from him because I've seen him playing last season and it was producing something that I rarely saw from a young player, that maturity, the skill, everything, you know, the flair. He had everything, and when he came to Chelsea, it's like he lost everything. So of course he's getting better. Of course we have to be pleased by the investment that he puts into his efforts every game that he plays, and maybe Tuchel has a right to put him every time because he trusted that that's the only way for Havertz to feel better and being more confident about his football. So the performances are better, but I know and I'm sure that he can give even 10 times more that we see right now. So it's why I'm not saying that I'm happy. It's not what I'm saying. It's why I'm saying I'm not convinced yet, because I think that guy can give more. It's not because I hate him, like in some social networks people are saying. it's just because I'm really fond of him, and I know, because I saw him last season and the season before, that he's a really talented player and he can bring much, much more than what we saw yesterday and what we see normally. But he's getting better.
Now, I want to talk about Chelsea's defensive record, and then we'll talk about the flip side of that, which is the fact that this team is scoring considerably fewer goals than before, which I think is also important. But Frank, help me to understand, obviously, well, before you were a great defender, you were a great attacking midfielder. And I'm just going to repeat it for those who didn't know.
Grand number 10.
The only reason that Frank Leboeuf didn't play number 10 in his career entire career.
He started, yeah.
No, but the reason he didn't end his career as a great number 10 is that he happened to play on the same team as a certain David Ginola, who, you know, no disrespect, has better hair than you do.
Yeah.
Even when you were younger,
true.
Probably. So, you know, that explains it.
Yeah.
But
definitely,
you know you're defending. And I want to understand this. Because before, when Chelsea were leaking a lot of goals under Frank, I would hear opinions from the punditocracy, from fans, from ex-pros like yourself. And it was pretty harsh stuff. It was, Alonso can't defend. Christensen is too soft. Rudiger is finished. Zuma too clumsy.
Aspilicueta, you know, too old.
It was just very, it was all about individuals not being good enough, right? I hate that term, like, not good enough. Jorginho, not good enough, right? It just drives me demented. I'm like, you can't just simply say not good enough if the guy's a professional footballer. You can say he's playing badly. You can say he may not have the skills. But just this trenchant, not good enough, right? Anyway, sorry, that was my little rant.
Yeah, I like it.
But I want to understand, because it's all the same players, right? It's Christensen who, you know, as Jules put it last week, I think, was in the freezer under Frank. It's Rudiger. All these guys who we said all of a sudden weren't good enough, and who, let's face it, you know, these aren't Desailly and Laurent Blanc and the other guys that you played with, right? These are good players, but none of these people are superstars. I said all along, the only Chelsea defenders who, well, one was a superstar, Thiago Silva. Reece James, I think, could be a superstar one day. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, you know, they have a ceiling. And yet, oh, and the goalkeeper too. I'm sorry, but, you know, most people who aren't French had no idea that they thought Edouard Mendy was Benjamin Mendy's brother, right?
Yeah.
Now, how is it that all of a sudden, this is a team that in the last, 13 games has six clean sheets in a row. They've conceded just two goals. One of them was Rudiger stupidly putting it in his own net when he wasn't under pressure. The other one, Takumi Minamino, take a bow. How is it possible? How do you get the same players and make them so effective defensively?
Many things. I think the first thing is just was saying, he took the two guys who were in the freezer, Rudiger and Christensen, and put them back, you know, on the field, getting the opportunity that Thiago Silva was injured. He decided to put Zuma on the bench, you know, maybe to make him think twice, even if he was doing great, and Zuma was doing great. But to put a bit of pressure on him, in a way, and give the confidence back to Rudiger and Christensen. I think he said them clearly, okay, I'm going to give you a chance. You're going to face your responsibilities. But I'm telling you that I know you can do the job. And they showed it. And if you put the players who are all competitors in front of their responsibilities, you can expect good things. So they decided to work together. I think he reminded them their function, the defenders. Firstly, the defenders. And so I think it's something people, defenders, are forgetting right now. Is they think about the good pass, they think about going forward, but they forget about the first function of a defender, which is to defend. And on top of it, you cannot deny the work of the midfielders. The people who work in the middle of the park, sorry, Kante and Kovacic, or sometimes Jorginho, are much better than they used to be, you know, or they were in the beginning of the season. They work very hard defensively, and altogether, it makes it makes, you know, with Edouard Mendy on top of it, it makes the defense being very compact and very effective. And that's what it is. And as you said, I agree with you. You cannot say to a player that he's not good enough. It doesn't mean anything because you have the system, you have the confidence, so you have to work on the psychological aspect of the person. And sometimes you change everything. And Tuchel has to get all the credits for that, because what he did with those players is absolutely fantastic.
We've got a piece on the ESPN website that you and I have wrote with our colleague James Oli as well about the sort of Tuchel's method. And what is very important here as well is the confidence that he gives to the whole squad, in the sense that Kurt Zouma is fifth in your centre-back's pecking order, right? Thiago Silva, Rudiger, Azpilicueta, Christensen, and then him. He's played what, Southampton, Burns, Barnsley, and Everton since Tuchel arrived. And yet, he can walk in the team like he did because Christensen was out, because Thiago Silva was out, and have such a dominant performance against a Luis Suarez that has been pretty good this season with Atletico Madrid, because the confidence that Tuchel and his staff have given to this dressing room is sensational. It's just like, we all committed here. You're all going to play at some point. It could be Marcos Alonso or Chilwell. It could be Reece James or Callum Hudson-Odoi.
Even Emerson comes on
and scores. Even Emerson comes on and scores, but has also started before one of the games. So you're all there, and I all trust you. Whoever plays, I trust you. I trust you to build from the back. I trust you to be confident on the ball. I trust you to make the movement, to understand how we press, how we defend. And I think when you zoom in and you come in, you don't think like, oh, I've got the pressure because I need to do well, otherwise I might never play again, or I'm this and that. No, you go in and said, okay, I'm taking over here. Christensen can play, Thiago Silva can play. I'm going to show that I'm as good as those guys, and that then maybe I can change his mind, and that next time I play again. And I think this is so key on what they've been so good collectively, Gab, as you were saying. And whoever plays, they all have that confidence. They all know exactly what to do, and I think it's great.
All right. On the attacking side of the ball, however, they're scoring substantially less goals. Mm-hmm. I think it's about, I mean, I think they scored nearly 50% more goals under Frank Lampard. He's addressed this. He says, well, they're still creating chances and so on. Personally, I think they are still creating chances. I think it has more to do with the fact that there is a lack of chemistry, because he's holding open auditions for the attacking spots right now. Am I wrong? Should Chelsea fans not be worried about the lack of goals, Frank?
No, you can be worried, because at some point, you know, yesterday, Atleti could have scored a goal 5 minutes before the end, and it would have been a scary five other last minutes, where Chelsea should have killed the game earlier. And you have to be killers, and you have to, when you have the chances to score, make sure that you do it. Pulisic, I don't recognize Pulisic. He came on, he played, and he's never been able to take on any players. And that's not the Pulisic that I knew, that I've known, sorry, before Tuchel came on. That's very strange, because he knew him, and that's a player who has a lack of confidence right now. So they have to sort the problem out. But yesterday, again, even if we can say that it was a fantastic game from Chelsea, they should have killed the game earlier, where they should have been more clinical. And they had some opportunities where the passes weren't good enough, and they always have the last, like, kind of sloppy pass in the last 20 yards, which doesn't allow them to score goals. They have to improve that aspect of the game, because they have to be able to kill the game.
I think the message, and please feel free to jump in if you disagree with me, otherwise we'll leave it there, is I don't think Chelsea are scoring fewer goals because they're being more defensive and they're defending better. I don't think those two, it's not like the team is more defensive and they've given up on attacking. And I think the goals will come, but there are individuals. But A, he needs to settle, and I think he will settle eventually on an actual, you know, on there will be a hierarchy there of players. And I think certain individuals have to improve. Werner is one. We see glimpses of him. Pulisic is another. I think when that happens, things will begin to click. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Tuchelism. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
No upsets here. Real Madrid stick to the back three and down Atalanta at Valdebebas. Jules, could they actually get significantly better between now and the end of the season?
That's a good question, Gab. I'm not completely convinced. This is still a team being carried up by Karim Benzema's talent and goal tally up front and Thibaut Courtois' amazing season and save at the back.
And the three midfielders were pretty good.
Yeah, well, especially Casemiro, who was on there, by the way, who was suspended, and Luka Modric and Toni Kroos, you're right. But collectively, I can't really see a strength in that team. And Zidane changed the formation, as you said, three at the back, 3-5-2. That worked to a certain extent. But I just struggle a little bit to see how far or how much better they can go. They benefited from huge mistakes again from Atalanta, like in the first leg, that made the work easier for them. But I'm just not sure if you face a City or a Bayern, how far this or how good this Real Madrid team can be.
Like these five guys have been carrying it, right? They could have had six dudes off the street, just about. No disrespect to Ferland Mendy's been good. For them to do it, they need to have other people step up and carry much more of the load, whether it's Vinicius living up to his glimpses and adding finishing to his game, whether it's Eden Hazard actually staying fit, whether it's Ramos's emotional return now, whether it's Varane, whether it's a sense other people have to go. They cannot be expected. Those five guys cannot play at this level the entire year.
No.
And that's not going to be enough for them to win the Champions
League. Benzema scored 21 goals. You know who's the next top scorer?
It's Casemiro.
With seven. Like, so if you block Benzema, where are the goals going to come from? And as for Atalanta, Gab, this is a major wasted opportunity, right? Especially that they gifted both games to Real Madrid.
Yeah, look, I mean, Atalanta have been playing with house money for a long time, right? And those achievements will stand forever.
Yeah.
But I think in the summer, there's going to be a part of them that says, you know, we added a bunch of players to the team. We tried to get more depth so that we could rotate more. You know, okay, we were unlucky with a red card in the first game. I still don't believe it was a red card, and I think it could have turned out completely differently. But still, we stupidly gave up a late goal. We made stupid mistakes in the second leg. We screwed up the Papu Gomez situation. Somebody screwed it up anyway.
Iličić, to a certain extent.
Iličić in the first coming on and coming off again. Yeah, you're going to look back and you're going to regret what might have been. And by the way, I tweeted this out, but I need to remind everybody. Atalanta, I think it was like 33 years to the day or something from the last time Atalanta reached a Champions League, or sorry, a European quarterfinal, a semifinal actually. And it's a great story because they were in Serie B at the time.
When they went to the semifinal of a European
of the Cup Winners' Cup, yes.
Wow.
And they were knocked out by Mechelen, or Malines, as the Francophones call it, who were captained by Kim Clijsters dad.
Yes,
I love
course,
it when my sports converge. Manchester City beat Gladbach 2-0, but Jules, this was a more comprehensive victory than the scoreline suggests.
They were so good. They were so dominant, Gab. They could have scored far more goals. They scored two in the first 17 or 18 minutes. Gundogan, the second one. De Bruyne with a fantastic left foot strike for the first one. Again, the Cancelo and the defense and Gundogan and De Bruyne, no number nines as such. They were fantastic. Again, 24 wins in the last 25 games. I don't know who would stop them other than Man United have done, but they will have to be really
good. I'm going to do a tiny bit of trolling here. Is this their best lineup? Is this their best? So that means no Raheem Sterling?
I'm with you 100%. Bayern roll over Lazio in the return leg two, winning 2-1 after the 4-1 win in Italy. Not much of a surprise there, Gab, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, my surprise was that Alexander Nubel still plays football.
Oh, yeah, he does.
I thought he was, you talked about Pfizer, I thought they'd put him in one of those, like, Pfizer Pfizers.
No, look, I mean, they were never going to get back into it. I think Bayern went out. They
strong team. Why did he play such a strong team, do you think?
I wasn't 100% sure of that. I think it might have been because they wanted to put a strong team out, but have them kind of manage the game, manage their energies,
yeah,
rather than, you know, give Lazio an excuse. I also think once you opted for Nubel, you know, you're like, all right, I better put, like, the A-team.
Come on, it's not that bad. It's not like if you and me have played.
No, but the guy's confidence is shot.
He's never
right?
played, yeah.
So, no surprise there. Important win, and now they can go back and focus on winning the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain play Lille and Lyon after the break, and they have some Champions League quarterfinals in between. So this could really define Pochettino's season. But in the meantime, they knocked Lille out of the French Cup. That's got to be encouraging, right, Jules?
It was. It was a good win, although Keylor Navas had to be Superman again and save the penalty and all of that. Kylian Mbappé coming on after Icardi's injury to score two goals. The Lyon game, by the way, is this Sunday, just before the international break. That would be huge in the title race if they can go away at Lyon and get the 3 points. It's still not perfect. Far from it. There's still no Neymar again. He might be back on Sunday. But for now, you take the win and you move on, especially after what happened last weekend.
With no Neymar, no Icardi, space for my man Moise Kean.
Yes, he's back from his COVID little break.
His COVID episode.
COVID episode. Joan Laporta is now officially the new president of Barcelona, and his unveiling was, as predictable, very Messi-centric. Messi, who was there, by the way, like a few other players, and Ronald Koeman.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah,
I
definitely.
I mean, look, Barcelona, of course, won on Monday night, beating Huesca 4-1. But I think more to the point, we've talked about this endlessly on this show. I don't want to go into it. If you want a summary, you can find our videos on YouTube or indeed read the 11 reasons for Barcelona.
Yeah, you find
fans to be cheerful.
Reasons.
Yes, that even that really Jordi Roll thing where we all freaked out, like, oh my God, the financial guru's gone. Look, Laporta has the tools to turn Barcelona around financially and to turn them around on the pitch, or at least keep them at this level on the pitch. It may be with Messi, it may be without Messi. You can't create a situation where, oh my God, you know, Messi's gone, now we're screwed forever and we're going to, you know, get relegated to the Catalan fourth division. No, no, no. You say, look, this is what Messi's worth to us. This is what we can afford to pay him. We're going to do everything we can to keep him. But if he goes, Barcelona have been around well before Messi, and we'll do it.
Yeah.
We'll let him go with a good conscience that we did everything we could. He made his own decision. He has the right to make his own decision.
And
that has to be the messaging from Laporta.
Yeah, and let's not forget that in his first stint as president, Laporta came over in 2003. The club was losing money. They had debts, and he turned things around back then, so he can well do it again.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Manchester United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says that he was left with a big rebuild, and the test of how well you're doing is the league. That tells you how well you're doing, not some knockout competition like the FA Cup or the Champions League, where you can be unlucky or you can be lucky. Is he right?
Yes and no.
He's right.
He's right, but no. I'm sorry. He still made big mistakes in the Champions League group stage, and United should still be in the competition, not in the Europa League. But he's right that you judge someone on the continuity of a whole season, you know, on what you do over a much bigger amount of games. And suddenly they've got, 14 points more than last season?
Wait, so if he's right, then Mikel Arteta's really bad because he won the FA Cup last season and he's mid-table this year.
You also have managers who are better cup managers than league managers. But that's what Pep Guardiola always says. It's harder to win the Champions League than to win your league. Because it's so unpredictable in Europe, because you only have two games against the same opponent, etc., etc. But
it's good to see him fighting back.
It feels to me, though, that Solskjaer is very insecure about what people are saying about him, what the perception is. Don't worry, focus on your work. He's improving slightly, this team. He's going to get a new deal. It's cool. Don't worry about what people say.
I have a feeling we'll be talking about some managers who are somewhat less insecure very soon.
Liverpool won on Monday night against Wolverhampton, but Jurgen Klopp was a bit negative, Nelly, Gab. He told Lothar Matthäus on Sky Germany that missing out on the Champions League qualification for next season would be a huge financial loss, and that at any other club, his position would be questioned right now.
I got no problem with this. He also said, like, oh, United or Manchester United far away, blah, blah, blah. Look, I have no problem with a bit of honesty. He's grateful to be at Liverpool, and he's grateful what the club have done. I think the club's view has been that, you know, the injuries and everything else have fundamentally screwed up this season.
Yeah,
there will be a huge financial loss, and I think they're in a bad position if they don't qualify for the Champions League. I think they're in a bad position anyway because of some of the contractual choices they made, where they kind of went all in, and they did spend big over the summer. He's speaking truth to power. I got no issue with that.
Me neither.
Jose Mourinho says that, quote, Michael Oliver is an outstanding referee who, unfortunately, quote, becomes very unlucky with his decisions when it comes to me. Jules, that's very subtle from the special one, isn't it?
Very clever. You're bad, or you're good, but you're bad when you play, you know, when you referee my team or one of my teams. You know, this is typical Jose, right?
He's basically saying that Oliver is something against them. I mean, I'm sorry.
Which is not true. And
well, whether it may be true, maybe not true, but as a manager, if you got to say it, you got to back
it up. That's what he does. Clubs in Belgium have voted in favor of merging the Belgian League and the Dutch League, the Eredivisie, the two top flights together. Gab, what's this all about?
Well, this is being pushed by Bruges in Belgium and by Ajax in Holland. And the idea is, if you had a Bene League, as they're so creatively calling it, you know, you would have critical mass. You would have more big teams, better teams. You'd have a big enough market that you could attract more sponsors. Neither Holland nor Belgium are very big countries. We've seen this before. They did it in the Women's League in those countries. UEFA have greenlit the idea. There's still a long way to go. It's not going to happen before 2025. Personally, I think it's a good thing.
I like it.
The big five leagues are so dominant that everybody else is getting screwed. And in 2021, there is no reason why we still should have these sort of, I don't say arbitrary boundaries, but if it makes football better in those countries, why not? But yeah, this isn't going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
France is preventing its foreign players from traveling outside the EU during the international break. Joel, seems a bit excessive to me.
Yeah, and we're not really sure if it's completely legal either.
I think FIFA might step in.
Yeah, they will have to check with FIFA. Basically, because there's no game in Asia, in South America, it's basically only for the African players, and there's a lot of them in Ligue 1 right now. So some clubs
are African World Cup qualified. They're big. I mean,
Senegal
have already
qualified. It's not friendly.
But,
of course. And some clubs have said, listen, it's risky. There's also regulation when you're going to come back over, this and that. So right now, the league have decided officially that no clubs in Ligue 1 or in Ligue 2 will let their players go back to Africa to play those qualifiers. But like you said, I'm still waiting. There might be a more twist in there.
Yeah, because on the surface, this violates FIFA's rules, which FIFA said, you know, if the quarantine period is more than 5 days, you can do this. But in France,
there's no quarantine period.
So.
We all know Erling Haaland is perhaps the biggest prize in the summer transfer market. But Gab, you've developed a new theory that is different to mine about his future.
Yeah, so basically, you've put forward the idea, I think very cleverly, that he has a 75 million euro release clause in 2 summers from now.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it's in Borussia Dortmund's interest to sell him this summer, perhaps for more than 75 million.
Yeah, you would get more money.
They can go and, you know, they can create some sort of auction for services. However, and that may be especially true if they don't qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah.
However, who's Erling Haaland's agent?
Mino Raiola.
If you wait 2 years from now, you don't have an auction for his transfer fee. You have an auction for Erling Haaland, and you have an auction for Mino Raiola's commission.
But you can still have a big commission even if he moves down for 150 million.
But if you spend 150 million, that's a lot less money that I can then give to Haaland and to Mino Raiola to make this happen. So I've come around to the idea that, honestly, if you're Mino,
he's going to stay.
Or if you're Erling Haaland, you'd rather stay. Maybe. As long as you're in the Champions League. I think that's the big discriminant there. Jules, you and I are part of a panel on Champions League Talking Points at ESPN.com. Now, go and check it out. It's on the website. But we'll give you a sneak preview because there's one question, which is, they made a big deal out of the fact that there's 8 U.S. players playing in the Champions League, which is a record. Now, it's a bit of a Fugazi record because in terms of minutes played, they're actually more 10 years ago. But which American impressed you most?
I think Weston McKennie has to be the most outstanding candidate. However, I like very much what I saw from Serginho Dest in that second leg against PSG, where I thought he was really good. The change of system helps him. And I think there's a lot of promises there.
I went with McKennie as well. I think it was always going to be McKennie, Reina, or Dest, simply in terms of significant playing time.
Another question from that panel, in honor of Pep, Gab, or Pepe, who is your ultimate Champions League cult hero?
Oh, I went with Jerzy Dudek, the miracle of Istanbul. Those two saves from Shevchenko, the penalty saves, the spaghetti legs, and the fact that he was in and out of the team, and then he got to, then he was dropped for Pepe Reina after that and the following season. Quickly, who's yours?
Frank Rijkaard, and I know you disagree, I don't care. He was the less admired and loved and appreciated of the three Flying Dutchmen at Milan, and he has such a great career as a player and manager. Love him, love the looks, love the chill.
Your boy Youssef En-Nesyri scores as Sevilla beat Elche in La Liga. It's a 9-point lead over fifth place. Surely Monchi can start planning on a Champions League budget next year, no?
I think so, Gab. And Franco Vázquez scored the second goal. I'd forgotten he'd played football.
El Mudo Franco Vázquez.
What a player.
Okay, the coolest nicknames in sports. I think El Mudo's got to be in my top five in football. In basketball, I liked Allen Iverson's original
Of course,
nickname,
of
the
course.
Answer.
And he's from Philadelphia.
I don't know why I moved to AI, but he's from Hampton Roads, Virginia.
Philadelphia legend. So, Sevilla good. I think you and I will share eternal regrets that maybe what could have been in this season, seeing how Atleti now are going through a bad patch, Real Madrid and Barca certainly are not as strong as they were before, that maybe if Sevilla hadn't dropped those points there and there, and hadn't gone themselves into a little bad patch, maybe they could have even hoped for better than fourth place.
And what could have happened in the Champions League, too? They weren't going to win the Champions League,
For a club like Sevilla, top four is what you have to be anyway, qualifying for the Champions League. And like you said, Monchi can plan now. Who will he be able to keep? I think Jules Koundé could be in demand in the summer. There might be other players as well. Diego Carlos maybe too. But certainly, for Holland Lopetegui,
I think their plan is to sell, I think they'll have to sell one guy.
Yeah.
Sell En-Nesyri, and you can keep Jules Koundé another year.
Yeah, probably.
Give him more money, and then a year from now, you can sell him for more if that's what you want to do.
And En-Nesyri, we've praised him before. If you don't know the story, when he was in a much smaller team before going to Sevilla, it was still one of those fantastic moves for Monchi to go and get him and to bring him to a club like Sevilla, and having that kind of success with him is fantastic.
Also, he had a couple stinkers too.
Yeah,
which,
but he's improved so
Monchi
much this season
compared
to at the start of the season where he was really not even number two to where he is now. So well done to him. The FA, the Football Association here in England, has apologised after an independent review found inexcusable institutional failures in safeguarding children in youth football from sexual predators. Gab, the allegation date back more than 15 years, but this was important even of today.
I think it is important. It is important to bring some closure. Obviously, you're not going to undo the damage that was done. Mm. These were FA-licensed coaches attached to football clubs.
Yeah.
The clubs had a responsibility. The FA had a responsibility at the time. Could it have been stopped entirely? Maybe not. You're always at threat. I mean, that's why we have rules and regulations. But I think it is important, even when horrible things happened a long time ago, to fully investigate, to establish the truth of what happened, because only then, can you have practices in place to protect the future. And I think it's really important to acknowledge what happened. A number of clubs have issued statements apologizing, and hopefully we don't have to talk about this again. Jules, Paris Saint-Germain's women's team are in the Champions League quarterfinals, but there's more here than meets the eye.
Well, yeah, because they beat Sparta Prague in the first leg 5-0, all good. The problem is, since that game, they've had a huge cluster of COVID positive tests within the squad. A lot of players had to self-isolate, cannot play or anything. So the second leg was very much in jeopardy. Either PSG could somehow find enough players to send over to the Czech Republic to play, or they would have to forfeit the game. If you forfeit the game, you lose 3-0 because you forfeited the game, which means that PSG would qualify, having won the first leg 5-0. So it's a bit of a weird one of, like, you can't be rewarding to go through to the next round if you forfeited the game. That should not be right. On the other hand, what's the solution for PSG's point of view, or for UEFA, or even for Sparta? So we will know on Friday, whenever you're listening to this pod, exactly what's going to happen. But it's a bit of a headache, this one, for UEFA.
That also sets quite a precedent, because by that logic, when Bayern played Lazio, they won 4-1 away.
Exactly.
And if they know that it's forfeit the return leg, they wouldn't have needed to play the return leg.
Because... Completely. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's a very, very tricky one, this one. After 5 years of holding out for an England call-up, Michael Antonio, the West Ham striker, has reportedly chosen to represent Jamaica. Gab is 30 years old. Better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's from Wandsworth in London. He's of Jamaican descent. They first approached him in 2016. What's interesting about Michael Antonio, I don't have his career in front of me, is that he was your classic late bloomer. He played a lot of lower league football.
Of course, yeah. They're going to have him in Redbridge, I think, or something like that.
And the fact that I don't know if he was already at West Ham in 2016 off the top of my head, but I love the fact the guy backed himself. The guy saying, Jamaica, you know what? I want to win an England cap, and I believe in myself.
Yeah, great.
You know, 5 years ago at 25 with no real top flight pedigree or whatever, and playing for West Ham, he's saying, like, I can get into the England team one day. I don't want to give up that hope. I think that's big, but equally, it's a big boost for Jamaica. I mean, I think the more competitive team, especially in an expanded World Cup that we have, I think the better.
You know what I would love is that qualify for Qatar 2022 and Michael Antonio, age 31, makes it to a World Cup, which must be the dream. Well, that and winning the Champions League, but must be the dream for any footballers. And maybe for a long time you thought, could happen with England or might not, and now he might have a chance to go, and I think that would be amazing for him.
Yeah, I think it also reminds you a little bit that, you know, how kind of integrated and multicultural the game is, right?
Yeah.
So Michael Antonio, born in England, will be representing Jamaica. Raheem Sterling, born in Jamaica,
exactly,
will be representing England.
Yeah.
Now, you may remember former England international Terry Fenwick as one of the Muppets that Diego Maradona runs by in that when he scored the great goal in 1986 against England. He's now the coach of Trinidad and Tobago. He's been accused of headbutting his press officer because his press officer arranged an interview for him and he didn't want to do it. Jules, have you ever been headbutted by a coach?
Never, though. No, never, Gab. However, Djibril Cissé one day wanted to have a fight because I wrote a piece a long time ago when he was still at Auxerre that he didn't like. So we met with the national team and he was like, what, do you want to have a fight? And I was like, come on, you know who would win. So we didn't have a fight, but it's not good look for your Trinidad and Tobago.
My money would have been on Cissé. Yeah.
Sweden and Juventus forwards Lina Hurtig and her wife Lisa released a video announcing that they will be having a baby, Gab. The twist, though, is that this was distributed by Juve on their social media channels. This is something that would have been unthinkable, 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this would have been. The fact that Juve would have, like, a really well-funded women's team already 10 years ago. I think it shows how far we've come. And obviously there's a long, long way to go when it comes to women's sports, but also in terms of social attitudes. I tweeted this out last night, and I expected some people to be like, well, you know, they shouldn't be, women shouldn't be having babies. Not, well, obviously they should, but you know what I mean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Two gay women. It was nothing but support. I mean, there were only a couple people. And I think it just shows you how quickly, whichever way you feel about it, how quickly attitudes have changed. And, you know, and the fact that a club like Juventus are celebrating this and saying, you know, we're going to be supportive of women, of
That's
gay marriage, of gay women.
Yeah.
This is a big message to send. And, you know, we take it for granted. So many of the top women stars, you know, many of them are gay. But to have this so public and so embraced by a football club, you know, in Italy, or even elsewhere, I haven't seen something on this level thus far.
You're right. It's the support that is so important.
Right. That brings us to an end. But how about we come back on Monday? Do this all over again.
Loads of things to talk about Monday.
All right. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, and love yourself.